Hey, it's Hannah from Holistic Hormonal Health, and today we are having a really fun podcast with Jennifer Aldaretta. She is actually the creator of an app called Groove, which is a really, really cool, very user-friendly app that I personally really love. And she has quite a story with fertility awareness and her own journey and how fertility awareness has really helped her learn more about her body and figure out her health difficulties that she had, which she originally kind of went on the pill for. So coming off of the pill, she was having a lot of issues because she was coming back to those period problems that she had. And fertility awareness, though she started using it as birth control, it really helped her to start learning more about her body. And she's going into detail with some of the things that she tried and how that has really helped her. So I'm really excited about this podcast, and I think that you're really going to love it. So without further ado, we are going to be talking to Jennifer.
All right, welcome to the Holistic Hormonal Health Podcast, Jennifer. It's so nice to have you. And I would love to for you to tell us more of your story and how you got involved in fertility awareness.
Well, thanks for having me, Hannah. I'm super excited to chat with you. So I'll just jump right into my story. It's been happening for a while. My story's been taking a while to play out. So it all started back when I was a wee one and started my first period, and it was super, super painful. It woke me up in the middle of the night, and I just had this feeling like my insides were all being torn out, and I thought that I just really had to take a big poo or something. I didn't really know what was going on. And then eventually realized that I had started my period, and I had heard a little bit from my mom about, you know, what that entailed, but I had no idea that I should be expecting the amount of pain that I had. So that's pretty much how everything went for several years after I got my first one. They were all super painful. I had to miss multiple days of school with every single one. I vomited most months from the pain on the first day that I started my period, and overall it was just a really terrible experience. And then when I was about, I guess I was about 14 or 15, somewhere in there, I went to my first gynecology appointment and ended up being put on the pill because of the problems that I experienced with my periods. And at the time, I didn't know any better than to question that and honestly welcomed the chance not to be in pain every single month. So I started taking the pill and ended up taking it for about 8 years. And during that time, I had like the typical side effects, mood swings, anxiety, you know, all sorts of fun stuff. But it was about a year and a half before I stopped. So I guess it was about a year and a half into college as well that I started having really weird symptoms that at first I didn't know to associate or attribute to the pill. And it was everything from panic attacks, heart palpitations, shortness of breath, dizziness, lightheadedness, just all sorts of really weird stuff, and it was very sudden onset. So I was really worried that there might be something going on, so I went to my general practitioner, who referred me to a cardiologist, who referred me to a pulmonologist, and I basically got tons of blood drawn, all these tests run, echocardiogram, EKG, wore a Holter monitor, got a breathing test. I was prescribed an inhaler. I was prescribed anti-anxiety meds. So just like crazy, crazy stuff. And not one of those people that I saw ever asked me if I was taking the pill or ever suggested that I stop taking it. But all of my tests ended up being normal. And so I was kind of just fed up with not having answers. So I decided to do some experimentation on my own. And it just kind of dawned on me one day that I had been taking the pill, and that was really one of the only things that had remained constant, because through that whole thing, I had changed up my diet. I had, you know, gone from eating what I originally thought was kind of a healthy diet to being like a vegetarian. And then I was a vegan for a while. And then I did like juice cleanses and all like the crazy, like fad diets. I cycled through all of those.
Yeah.
To no avail. And I changed my exercise routine. I changed all these things, and finally dawned on me that I had been taking the pill the whole time, and maybe I should try stopping, because I didn't really have any sense of what my life was like without it, because I'd been on it for so long. And all of my symptoms kind of went away. And after I stopped taking it, I was kind of had this moment of like, holy shit, now what do I do? Like, I'm not on the pill anymore. What am I going to do about birth control? What am I going to do about managing cramps? And I started to do a ton of research on my own to try to figure out what I wanted, because I knew I didn't want to use a hormonal method. I knew that even a copper IUD was out of the question because of my history with my painful periods. And those apparently make it worse.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, from a lot of people that's the case. That just wasn't really an option for me, so I just was doing all this research on my own. And eventually just randomly stumbled across fertility awareness via Google search, probably, and started reading studies about it, read Taking Charge of Your Fertility, Garden of Fertility, and, you know, every blog post and article and study that I could get my hands on, and kind of decided that that's exactly what I wanted. That was a perfect fit for me, and such is history.
And at the time when you found fertility awareness, because you kind of went on to the pill and then, okay, it's a birth control method and it's going to help me with these cramps. And then you went off of it just because of all the side effects that ended up coming up for you. But then when you were looking for fertility awareness, you were just looking for a birth control method to replace the pill, right?
Basically, I was looking for, yeah, I mean, I knew that that was kind of my top priority at the time. It's like, I really need something to help me not get pregnant, because that's not something that I want to do right now. And I was just going to figure out how to manage the pain some other way. I figured that, you know, maybe I would end up taking a bunch of pain pills every month. I didn't know at the time, but I knew that I would figure something out. And that the pill was just no longer an option for me.
Awesome. So how did you end up? I know that I've had other people on the podcast too that have said that charting was kind of the thing. And for me too, I had a much more mild hormonal issues than some people, and for that I feel very lucky, but there's been quite a few people that it's fertility awareness that has made them kind of realize that certain things were hormonal health issues, and that they could actually do something about it. And was that the case for you?
Yeah, it absolutely was. So I feel like I've always been a little bit, like, I've always been very inquisitive about things, and I don't know, but when I was younger, I feel like I just assumed that all of the problems that I had with my period were genetic, because every woman in my family had the same issues. I have two sisters.
Yeah.
They both have issues with the same thing. We were all put on the pill when we were teenagers. My mom had issues. Even, you know, her sisters and her mother had similar issues. And so I just assumed, like, okay, this is just a genetic thing that I can't do anything about. And I never really thought twice about it. I just thought that the pill was, you know, the only thing that I would be able to do. But yeah, once I did start charting and realizing, like, oh, all of these things that I'm charting are actually correlated with what my hormones are doing throughout my cycle. And, oh, this doesn't look quite right. This might be because I have some hormonal issues going on. But yeah, that honestly never even entered my mind until I started charting.
Yeah, definitely. That's so, and I think that that is one of the, I'd say two things that are like the most valuable to people once they start using fertility awareness is like that insight into your hormonal health, and then also just the empowerment that comes along with that, which those kind of go hand in hand because I think part of the empowering part, yeah, you're also taking control of your fertility, but you're also able to take control of your hormonal health. So I think that that's part of what makes it so empowering. But so for you, when you started working on your hormonal health, so one of the things with you that's interesting is that you've kind of done a variety of different things in order to in order to figure out what is going on with your hormones. And I think that probably everyone who's worked on their hormones has done a little bit of something or like tweaked a thing here or there. But in some cases, you can really, really get into it. And in some cases, you can do like one little tweak and everything is perfect. And in some cases, you have to do something crazy. And maybe that's because, like you were talking about, it's like a genetic predisposition in your family. So I would love for you to talk a little bit about what things you've done, what like led you to do them, and how that's kind of shown up on your charts, and like how fertility awareness has helped you navigate through those things.
Yeah, so I mentioned that for a while, I was, on a vegetarian diet and, a vegan diet for a little while too. And I didn't really notice that that necessarily had a negative effect on my cycles, but it definitely wasn't helping.
So
So
that was
I.
exactly the same then as before. You didn't
Yeah,
have any like symptom
more or less
change.
the same. No, I didn't really have any symptom changes. So, and that's what I've. Basically, that's a lot of what I've been gauging the changes that I make on is whether or not I actually have changes because my cramping and symptoms are so severe during my period that I'm pretty confident that at this point it just a placebo effect has, doesn't impact me at all.
Yeah.
It's like that's just not that kind of pain is just not something that I could possibly ignore.
Yeah. Placebo doesn't work on me either.
Yeah,
Nothing.
placebo doesn't work on me. And I'm sure it doesn't, it would to some degree, but just not with that level of pain. So one of the first things that I noticed was that my temperatures were consistently pretty low. And even today, that's something that I'm still working on, but that's for me was a really big red flag that there was something going on that I needed to look at. My pre-ovulatory temperatures were dipping down into like the 96s, 96.5 before I ovulated, and then even post-ovulatory temperatures, which should be on the higher end or 97.5,
Oh, wow.
97.7, so still on the very low side. So I had a pretty strong inkling that there was some, at the very least, some sort of progesterone deficiency or overproduction of estrogen that was, throwing that out of balance. So that was really helpful for me to when I was trying to make changes. And at first, when I started playing around with diet and lifestyle stuff, I was really, really big into supplements. So I'd just be like, okay, what supplements are gonna, help progesterone production? So I think I had like at one point probably 10 different supplements that I was
Oh,
taking a
wow.
day. And then I was like, this doesn't seem to be helping. This is kind of ridiculous. I shouldn't have to be popping this many pills to get healthy, to see like my cycles regulate. So I kind of switched up my approach. I think that was when I was doing all the supplements, that was also the time that I was vegetarian. I don't think I was vegan at that point. But I started reading stuff about, how you actually do need a certain level of like healthy fats every day, and like cholesterol affects hormone production and all these things that I didn't really understand before that I ended up seeking answers to on my own. So I slowly got into, I transitioned from vegetarianism into trying a paleo diet. So that was my first, like, leap into meat eating again. And I did a paleo, like, very strict paleo diet for about 30 to maybe 2 months, so 60 days or so. And was just monitoring changes that I saw in my cycles. And I wasn't really noticing a difference. My periods were just as painful. My temperatures were just as low. I still had much longer bouts of very fertile, slippery cervical fluid leading up to ovulation. So at one point I had, there were several cycles where I had, you know, a week of very, very slippery cervical fluid before ovulation. And that was another kind of red flag that there was something not quite right. And my ovulation would happen, like, you know, between 20 and like 25 days into my cycle.
Yeah.
So there were all of these little things that I started to notice, and I was like, okay, I really have to figure some shit out. So started with the paleo diet, like I said. I did several months of that, very strict. And then I transitioned into a diet that was similar to paleo that's called the autoimmune protocol.
Uh-huh.
Because autoimmunity is a very strong, there's a very strong genetic factor for autoimmunity in my family. My older sister has an autoimmune disorder. My mom has an autoimmune disorder. Her mom has an autoimmune disorder. Her sister has an autoimmune disorder. So I was like, okay, well, there's obviously some sort of genetic predisposition for autoimmunity, which, you know, and there's a lot of studies now that are starting to link endometriosis with autoimmunity.
Yep.
And, you know, if you have endometriosis, you're more likely to develop an autoimmune disorder. And there's some people who even think that endometriosis is an autoimmune disorder. So I tried an autoimmune paleo diet. So that's restricting nightshades, which are like tomatoes, peppers, eggplant. And then I went on the low FODMAP diet, which cuts out certain sugars that are fermentable sugars that, you know, may or may not make your gut unhappy. But I basically cycled through lots of different things and stayed on each one for about 2 months at a time before I would give up because nothing had been happening. And my latest venture has been into a ketogenic diet. So not necessarily ketogenic, but just a very low carbohydrate diet.
Yeah. And for those who are listening who don't know what ketogenic is, it's like you're eating so few carbohydrates that your body starts producing something called ketones. And it uses those kind of similarly to how it would use glucose, which is a carbohydrate.
Yeah, exactly. So they, for those who don't know about it, it's like your body converts into a fat burning state instead of a carb or sugar burning state. So it uses that as a fuel source in, you know, in light of not having enough carbs to do that. So that's what I've, and I'm still doing the low carbohydrate diet. And my idea behind that was, just a lot of stuff that I've done. I probably sound like a maniac, which I am, which I'm fine with. But so, like, all through the issues that I've had over the years, you know, I've gone to a lot of doctors who all say, like, you know, we can't confirm that you have endometriosis because that requires, like, a minimally invasive procedure, but a procedure nonetheless. And that just wasn't something that I was really interested in having. But I've had doctors tell me, like, you probably have this. We can't confirm it, but you have all the symptoms. And my mom had endometriosis. My mom had fibroids before she got her hysterectomy. And I started doing research and finding out that there were some links between women who had endometriosis and having an overgrowth of candida or a specific yeast in the gut that really loves to eat sugars. So I thought that that was really interesting. And the idea behind going very low carb is that when you restrict the carbohydrate intake or the sugars, it starves out those yeasts that are overgrowing in your gut that really shouldn't be growing in your gut in high quantities, to help then balance your hormones and make way for bacteria that should be in your gut but don't have the space because of the candida and the yeast that's growing there. So I've been through a lot of different diets, and so far the low-carb diet for me seems to be working really well, and that's the one that I've had the most success with. And my periods have been getting progressively better every month, and one of the really big indicators for me that things were getting better was that my bowel movements were becoming regular, which is something that I, like, even as a kid, I struggled with, you know. And so when that changed, I was like, that something that I'm doing is working. I should stick with it until I feel better, and then can hopefully introduce other foods besides just like meat and vegetables.
Yeah, definitely. And for most people, it is just so that like no one's scared off or anything like that. For most people, it is something, for one thing, like a lot of these diets that sound crazy, a lot of times they're very therapeutic, and I hear so many people now they'll kind of preach these diets, these like diet gurus, they'll kind of preach these diets that are pretty extreme, and you're cutting a lot of things out of your diet. But most people can eat most things, but sometimes some people will need some time on a certain diet, and it's not even the same therapeutic diet for everyone that works the best, but need a certain amount of time on a more restricted diet in order to kind of reset things before they can tolerate other types of food. So it's good to note that, you know, it might not be as extreme for you, but if you're looking for, or we'll ask Jennifer this, what would you say your tips are for anyone who is using their chart to help gauge what's going on with the specific like health regime they're trying? What have been the most helpful things for you?
The most helpful as far as like just looking at the changes in my charts.
Yeah.
I would say temperatures have been a decent one for me. So I have noticed that my temperatures do change, like the ranges of temperatures, because I mentioned earlier that I tend to have very low temperatures throughout my cycle. So anytime I see like a change in the range, then I feel like that's something that maybe I should continue pursuing. And cervical fluid, I think, is probably the bigger one, because I've noticed that as I've changed up my diets, the amount of time that I have a lot of really slippery, fertile cervical fluid right before ovulation has fluctuated and changed, and it's actually taken on a more healthy pattern, because I think if you had asked me at this time last year, I probably had maybe like one day of, or maybe like, I don't know, I started having cervical fluid right after my period, and then I would start having like egg white fluid or slippery fluid a couple days later and have that for 10 days until ovulation.
Yeah.
So that has definitely changed a lot, and that has changed as I've been varying my diet, and I think I'm down to like 3 days of egg white fluid before ovulation, which I'm like,
yeah,
feels a little bit more like balance to me. And
yeah,
I think cervical fluid for me has been the biggest one, and I also don't have quite as much after ovulation too, so that was another big thing. I had like lots of really sticky or creamy or, you know, whatever, luteal mucus, whatever you want to call it, after ovulation, and now that's, you know, that has also normalized a bit for me.
Yeah, cervical fluid just on its own is magical for figuring things out. Just because you have like temperature's great because you're confirming ovulation, you're seeing if you have higher temperatures, stuff like that. But it's really great cervical fluid because you can see higher estrogen levels, lower estrogen levels, lower progesterone levels. You can see a lot, which is really, really awesome. Well, I would love for you to talk about, before we run out of time, one of the things that you did because you love fertility awareness so much is create an app for fertility awareness, and I would love for you to talk to us about that.
I would love to talk about Groove. So Groove was kind of born out of my finding fertility awareness and stopping the pill and just my entire struggle with my reproductive health. And when I started charting, when I started fertility charting, I had looked around for, ways, like tools that would help me. I charted on paper for a long time, but I don't know. There was something, I know that you really like paper, but there's just something
I
about it that
do.
I wasn't, yeah. There's just something about it that I wasn't a really big fan of for some reason. I think maybe it was because, like, at the time I, work didn't wasn't working from home, and I checked my cervical fluid throughout the day and just like didn't want to have to remember things and just, I don't know, for me it was just a personal preference thing. So I tried out tons of different apps. I think at the time there were even some web tools that would help with fertility charting
Yeah,
that I
there's still
had tried
some.
out, and I was just never satisfied with any of them. There was just always something very big missing for me, and I also almost universally just kind of hated the design and user experience of all of the products.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's nothing personal against other apps. I'm just like, I feel like I'm really picky about things, and it just
Yeah,
wasn't,
good
it
user
just
experience is hard to find with anything, I think, because you
yeah.
have to have a creator that really cares about that.
Yeah, exactly. So I came up with the idea to make an app to help me do all of these things and chart all these things and eventually, like give other people information and tips and try to empower them to do these things for themselves too. And yeah, so we have an iPhone app called Groove, and it'll help you chart your period, whether your cycle is regular or irregular. It'll help you chart your fertility, and it also has very customized information within the app. So when you first open the app, it'll take you through a setup process that asks you about, what your family planning goals are, what your cycles are like, what sort of birth control you're using, if any. And it'll customize and tailor all of the information in the app based on that stuff. So it feels like a very customized experience, which is something that was really important to me because I noticed that when I was using certain apps and I would go to put data in, I was seeing data fields asking me every day about, pregnancy tests and ovulation predictor kits. And I was like, those aren't things that are relevant to me, so why do I have to look at them every day?
Yeah.
It was really important to me to create an experience that felt really personal and customizable. And I think that we did that successfully. I'm really proud of what we created, and we really focused on making a really clean design that, something that you could just look at a glance and understand what's happening with your charts. And yeah, so I mean, I'm really proud of it, and we are coming to Android soon. It's only on iPhone right now, but we're coming to Android soon and are actually recruiting beta testers at the moment. So we would love for anybody to help us beta test for Android.
And if you would like to do that, where can they contact you if they would like to do
So if you're interested in beta testing, you can send us an email at howdy@readytogroove.com. We're in Texas, so we say howdy.
that? Awesome.
So,
Okay, yeah, I would definitely agree that Groove is one because I've tested a lot of apps, and yeah, you're right. I love paper better for myself, but I know so many people love apps, and I can tell when I use Groove that like the user experience was very thought about, and that's something I care about a lot because as someone who also thinks about the user experience of other people when they're using my things that I create and all that stuff. Like, I think it's really important because it's not about you, it's about them. So, it's really great to have that, really shine through with that app,
yeah.
I think.
I think we probably go a little overboard in that regard in a lot of cases, and it takes us so long to make new features because of it, because we're like, we really just like start from the very beginning when we're making a new feature instead of just like throwing it on top of everything else. We're like, okay, well, do we need to restructure something else to get this to fit in? Does it feel like it's an afterthought? You know, what are some use cases that would make this confusing? Or, you know, is there a better way that we could put this together? So we approach every problem very methodically and are very meticulous about the process that we use to create new features and to make improvements to the app. And we're a little obsessive about it, but I think that that has helped us produce a good product.
It's good to be obsessive. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, Jennifer. It was great having you.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And yeah, if anybody wants to give Groove a try, you can download it in the App Store. You can follow us on Twitter at ReadyToGroove. Send us an email. We're always happy to talk to you.
Yeah, and I will be linking everything down below as well.
Awesome.
Well, awesome. Thank you. No problem. Bye. Have a good day.
You too.